At DSW, we ask the important questions, like, what shoes are you going to wear? Whether you're prepping for wedding season, festival season, or just planning the ultimate vacay, the right shoes can make or break an RSVP. So own the moment. You've got big plans, and we've got just the shoes. At the perfect price, of course. Get ready to get ready with Designer Shoe Warehouse. Head to your DSW store or DSW.com today, and let us surprise you.
My name is Jessa. One of the things I love the most about working for United Healthcare is that everybody matters. Every moment matters. There's a person behind every problem. I care because it's what I was put on this earth to do.
I'm Ben, and I work at United Healthcare. I am just one piece of a larger puzzle, but every piece matters. It's more than just work. We want to make the healthcare system better for everyone. I care because I want to make a difference. That's what committed to care means to me.
This episode is supported by Ring, because at the end of the day, your home is your sanctuary. And with Ring, it's protected. Whether you're across the house or across the country, keeping an eye on things shouldn't be a mystery. With the battery doorbell, you can keep track of your packages and see more of what's happening at your front door in real time. If you want to make sure your yard is safe at night, the Outdoor Cam Plus delivers a wide field of view and enhanced video clarity with Retinal 2K video. And for the ultimate in detail, you can upgrade to 4K cameras and doorbells featuring Retinal Vision. It gives you ultra-clear footage that actually lets you zoom in without losing those important details. The Ring system is helpful every single day. Like a lot of us, most of our shopping is done online. There's a certain peace of mind that comes with knowing exactly when a package arrives while you're busy at work or running errands. It's not just about the technology. It's about the relief of knowing your home is secure. It's incredibly easy to set up, and it gives you that extra layer of protection for what matters most. Your door, your yard, your home, your peace of mind. With Ring, it's protected. Shop cameras, doorbells, and more right now at ring.com.
PNC Bank brings you Call of the Wild Money Moves.
You hear that?
YOLO!
That's an internet troll telling you to put all your money into a single investment.
YOLO! YOLO! YOLO!
He wants you to liquidate your emergency fund.
YOLO!
And buy a digital racehorse named Silicon Steve.
YOLO!
Stay vigilant. He's very persistent.
YOLO!
Guard against wild money moves with PNC Bank. Brilliantly boring since 1865.
Swinging a high drive into center field, hits at the wall, it is gone! Passes, does it again!
Again!
It's gone! It's into the bullpen! This game is tied! This game is tied!
He swings and rips one to center field. It's high, it's deep, it's back, it's gone! Sale winds, he fires. Swing and a miss, strike three, it's over! The Red Sox have won the World Championship!
Heyo, welcome back to Play Tessie. It's episode 82. If you're listening on Drop Day, it is June 17th, episode 82. There's only been one 82 in Red Sox history, and his name is Johnny Lazor. 4 years, career 669 OPS. This is the official podcast of being 2-0 since Tristan Casas ate wasabi, also known as the official Red Sox podcast of WEEI. I am here with Sammy. I'm here with Joe, who's in for Pat today. Before we get going, talk about the Sox taking 2 of 3 from the big bad Yankees. Hit that subscribe button. Whether you're on Odyssey, the Odyssey app, Apple, Spotify, hit that subscribe button. Rate us 5 stars. It helps us out a ton. And check us out on YouTube. We are on the WEEI playlist. You can subscribe to that and check out our playlist. Wow, we're on the WEEI channel. We have our own playlist. You can subscribe to WEI and check out our playlist. Hit that thumbs up button. Helps us out a ton. Remember to hit us up on the social accounts at PlayTessie on both Twitter and Instagram. Sox take 2 out of 3 from the Yankees right after taking 2 out of 3 from the Phillies. That's right. They take 2 out of 3 from the best team in the NL and then go and take 2 out of 3 from the best team in the AL. This is a team that has had trouble protecting home field, not just this year, but for the past few years. And they did it against two of the best teams in baseball. You're really getting a look at what this team could look like, sort of in Alex Cora's eyes. He's been asking for years for a more athletic team, and that helps their base running, that helps your defense, and he's been asking for it. And this year, you've kind of seen it on full display, and they love to stack up that 9-1-2 with Rafaela, Duran, and Hamilton. And those guys just keep getting on base and keep wreaking havoc. the team, for the most part, has played all right defense. There have been some kind of flubs in the infield particularly between first base and pitcher exchanges, but the outfield has been good defensively all year. And when we're talking about getting these guys on base and wreaking havoc on the base paths, in the third game of the series, the Red Sox set their franchise record with 9 stolen bases, 4 of which came from David Hamilton, who just continues to produce. I feel like this is kind of a potential inflection point in the season. I feel like this could potentially be a turning point if they build on it. I paused before I said that because it feels like every other time we've suggested that a turning point could be had, they haven't grasped it. They haven't run with it. And that's dating back for the last 3 years. But now here's another opportunity. The vibes are high. Again, here with Sammy and here with Joe. Sammy, you've got your Sox visor on. How are you feeling, buddy? We were at Fenway Park for hours yesterday, but
yeah,
this win, I don't even know which win was sweeter, but it just feels good.
Yeah, it was a long day, long but a fun Saturday at Fenway Park. How do I feel? That's a really good question. I have no clue. I'm thinking right now that I might give myself the quote, when this team gets healthy, end quote, talk. Maybe talk myself into maybe some fun baseball games down the stretch of the season. But I'm not quite there yet, but this is certainly a big step in the right direction. Like you said, it's not just the Yankees they won 2 out of 3 against. It's the Phillies and then the Yankees. So this team is hot. They're still missing a lot of guys. But to come out and win 4 out of 6 on that homestand, woo, feeling good.
Yeah, it's a point. I like where your head's at because it's not a point to let yourself run wild with Red Sox takes. Oh my God, this team is going places. Like, let's pump the brakes. Like they beat the Yankees 2 out of 3 and they beat the Phillies 2 out of 3. And that is awesome. My goal for these guys was to split that. And I thought that was a lofty goal and they overachieved it. So yeah, I mean, they are 2 games above 500. This is a point in time where they could start to build ground as they face lesser competition. I believe their next 15 games are against teams that are under 500, albeit they are teams that are not like, it's not like you're facing the White Sox and the Rockies for 15 straight games. Like, you are facing reasonable teams. They're just not great teams, but you're going to face those teams as you're getting healthier. Imminently, we're talking Willier Abreu probably on Friday, Chris Martin probably on Tuesday, Romy Gonzalez soon. He's already on his rehab stint. Casas, we'll see. He had said he wanted to be back on the 21st. That's definitely not happening. It's going to be at least a couple of weeks after that. But big brave Joe Braverman, you're at Fenway Park right now, if I'm not mistaken. No, you're in Brighton. Brighton.
That's right.
How's the vibes in Brighton?
Considering I am the only one in the building, I did about 4 laps before we started, just like fists in the air being like, we did it. But no, tonight was crazy because there was so much history being made. But I'm sort of on the same wavelength as the two of you. It's like, let's wait and decide until we see this next couple of stretch of games. As you said, it's Toronto for 3, and then they go to Cincinnati for 3. This is huge to capitalize on. This is huge when you have the energy of welcoming the two best teams in baseball and you come out on a positive note going 4-2. Like, we, as you said, Gordo, a win would have been 3-3, but to go 4-2, that's a momentum builder. Not saying that this is going to be riding to a World Series, but the idea is capitalizing off of these 6 games where they went 4-2. That will give us sort of the vibes on where we think this team is headed. It's not right now. Right now, we can feel good. We can feel so happy that they basically embarrassed the Yankees on 2 straight nights. But when we get down the road and we're right here a week from today on Sunday after they're done in Cincinnati, then we can decide which direction they're going in.
Yeah.
Two straight games on national TV, I might add.
Yes. Joe, I like the last point you made. Like, everything you said, I agree with. But also, like, do celebrate this. This is awesome. Yeah. We had a good week as Red Sox fans, and we haven't had that, a consistently good week start to finish where they win games, nothing catastrophic happens, win games against good teams. So do celebrate this. That was That was fun Red Sox baseball. Brought the vibes. And by the way, Celtics kind of crapped on the vibes game four. Red Sox were like, look, you guys have had our backs in terms of vibes all year long. Let us bring the good vibes this time. So look at that, Boston.
So something literally just came into my head. As Sammy, you said good week, and then I thought back. So the Red Sox, that game where Bale let up the grand slam in Chicago, that game imploded right before the Savannah Bananas took over Fenway. And since then, so they won the last game in the White Sox series, and then they won four out of their next six. They've won 5 out of 7 since the Bananas came to Fenway. Do we think that the Bananas like sprayed some sort of like energy in Fenway, and it's just like maybe we're just like cured of whatever has sort of cursed the Red Sox since they traded Mookie? Like, I don't know.
Oh yeah, I mean, totally. They were spraying all over the place when they're in Fenway.
Oh yeah.
It's not possible because Durant didn't make a backflip catch in left field.
Yes. So correct.
That would be if they like gave the Red Sox their powers. They're not giving them their powers. The Bananas are keeping the powers to themselves, but they can spray a little bit of magic sauce, you know.
They sprayed their sauce all over Fenway, and I think that the good vibes they brought, like that, you know, maybe carry it over. We're really grasping at straws to figure out why these guys are winning. I think they're just playing good baseball finally, aside from the infield defense. But man, yeah, since the Bananas and the Party Animals, they were great too.
They were better.
Two teams, yeah, they won actually. Since they came to Fenway, the vibes have been good. There's some magic to Banana Ball.
Yeah, and Joe, I want to go back to a point you made. I actually can't remember what the point was, but it got me thinking about how do you get to the playoffs as like a third wildcard team or a second wildcard team in this kind of era of the playoff format? Because, I mean, back when we were growing up, I mean, there were four teams in each league that got into the playoffs. You had to be really, really, really good to get in. And a team in the Red Sox position that hovers around 500 for the year doesn't have a chance to get in that format. In this format, really, you just need to be a few games above 500. 500 is 81-81. If you have 86 wins, you have a reasonable chance to secure that third spot. How do you get to 86 wins? You play 500 ball the full year and have one good stretch. So when we have that goal for the team of win 3 out of 6 against the Phillies and Yankees, that goal is with the mindset of staying at 500 so that when the time for that run comes, hope ideally and most likely when you're healthy, you're at 500 so that when you build, you're building from an even record as opposed to being like 4 games under 500 so that when you win, you know, 8 in a row, in that scenario, you're only 4 games above 500. In this scenario, you're now 8 games above 500. So, I mean,
yeah, the big thing that we talked about,
take advantage of.
Yeah, the big thing we talked about weeks ago before they went into this big stretch where they played really good teams, including the Phillies and the Yanks, was what did you want to see from this team? And I think we all agreed if they're hovering at 500 and still within striking distance of the playoffs, that's still a win. Well, here we are now at the end of the stretch, and they did exactly what we thought they should do in order to, I guess, stay afloat. In the playoff chase was they went 500. Now they're 2 games over 500. And as you said, Gordo, they had a really good stretch. And like we said at the beginning, if you don't capitalize on this, then it's going to turn out to be another lost season.
I can't wait for trade deadline time when we can talk about like, what do you do with O'Neal? What do you do with Pivetta? Because a week ago, I would have been like, you have to move them. I know this team is hovering around 500, blah, 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 but you got to move them. And now, after just a week, I feel like such a dork. But now I'm like, you know, maybe if you move Pivetta, you acquire someone who's just as good with his younger team control. And it's just so you don't regress. And yeah, keep O'Neal. What are you going to get for him anyway? Why not just keep him? So, like, oh, once we get to that point, we're about a month and change out from those discussions. Actually, maybe just a month from now, we'll be talking about it.
Two weeks.
We're nuts. Maybe we'll start talking about it like next episode or the end of this episode. Who knows? Well,
to be honest with you, they've already started like a lot of other media. Like they were asking Buster only about the trade deadline.
Did you hear Duran after the game? They straight up asked him. Yeah. I don't know if you caught
stupid.
This.
That was stupid as shit. That was the dumbest fucking
Red question. Sox PR. Red Sox PR is probably popping bottles at that answer. That was the perfect PR answer. So ESPN, for context, they asked Jaren Duran a question. I forget the exact wording, but it was something along the lines of like, You know, you guys are contending. The trade deadline's coming up. What do you think's going to happen? And he kind of was like, what? I mean, I don't know, man. It's not my job. I'm
happy we play. With the
team. Like, we're playing well. I like the guys we got. It's not up to me. Go Sox. And, like, perfect, perfect to a T PR answer. So good job.
Do you remember a couple of years ago when it was literally on an ESPN post game when he delivered that whole, like, you guys don't believe in us, like no one believes in us and whatever. And then they just like took headlines and everyone was, and then they had to like tell him, like, dial it back.
Yeah.
He's come a long way in these situations.
It was already a win for Sox PR when Casas grabbed the mic stick.
Oh my God. He's what awesome. I love every time he gets a mic in his hand. He literally told me yesterday, I'll do anything for the camera in regards to the Wasabi Challenge, which, by the way, I don't want to talk about yet because that's going to be my enough said. Okay. But
yeah,
but he wasn't lying. Like, that guy absolutely loves the camera.
I think I would actually say that we can dig more into this for your enough said. But I would say, like, Casas, if you think he's like an interesting, funny guy, he's like more than I would have imagined, like funnier. You know, like, sometimes these guys are different on camera, and then you talk to them and they're kind of like, oh, you're kind of putting it on for the camera. But he, like, is legit a funny dude. So I'll save this conversation for your enough said because I'm excited to talk about that. But
yeah, me too. But just to get back to where we were about how the Red Sox can build on this and what needs to happen for the Sox to build on this. And I do have some stats prepared for some of the guys who have been playing well. But I think to start off with this series is to start in the first game where Alex Verdugo comes back, goes 3-for-5 with a home run that he pimped the absolute shit out of. And Bradfo and I talked for 2 hours on the radio the next day about should they plunk Verdugo, who would be the leader in the clubhouse that steps up and says something needs to be done, who would actually throw that pitch. And we came to the conclusion that, like, no one. They don't have anyone that's going to say that they should do that. And they don't have anyone who's going to throw that pitch. And then Sammy and I proceeded later that afternoon to see Verdugo being buddy-buddy with, like, every single player on the team on the field. It was very evident that that was not going to happen.
Yeah, but they're not going to throw at him.
Yeah, I mean, I guess before I get to the point I was trying to make, I do want to get your guys' takes on the Verdugo homer, thoughts on it. Would you have liked to see the Sox retaliate? I mean, I guess it's easier now to have said they just won the next two games and he went 1-for-9. So that's your retaliation. But in the moment, take yourself back there. What did you want to see them do after you saw him pimp the absolute shit out of that homer?
I mean, I can't say what I wanted them to do, but, like, well, okay, I'll give you a long winded answer.
Is it legal?
No, depends where you're at. But yeah, that home run, great. Of course he did that. I feel like Verdugo is a big moment kind of guy. Maybe not a big game kind of guy, but, like, a spotlight on him, he does well sometimes, I guess. Like, with the Dodgers, when they came to Fenway and everyone was, like, washing their nuts, like, oh, they're the best. And then Verdugo had his leadoff home run, like, two games in a row. That comes to mind. And then this home run against the Red Sox, you're right, Gordo, he pimped the shit out of that. And I, you know, if that were the Red Sox and, you know, we got a Yankees player and he hits a home run and mocks the Yankees fans, like, yeah, come on. We would have loved it. But it sucks when you're on the other side of it. And then everyone on, like, social media, like, oh, Red Sox fans, bitch, you wish you had Verdugo back. Like, no, nobody does. Nobody wishes he was back. I'd rather Willy Abreu, who is in his spot now. But in the moment, I was like, yeah, throw at him. But in hindsight, I think it's better to make him go, 1-for-9 after that and two losses? Yeah, so
1-for-9 with just a mere single and two losses.
And then the Yankees the next day after game one, they post that picture of him drinking Starbucks or whatever, drinking coffee in the dugout, like, with that smirk. I'm like, oh, he's so chill and relaxed at Fenway. They're cruising. And yeah, catch those L's, Dookie and the Yankees. But yeah, I'm glad they didn't throw at him. I'd rather them beat the Yankees twice, and that's what they did.
I would have rather they throw at him and beat him twice, but I didn't expect that to happen. It would have been fun because, like, really there was a moment in time there where there was potential for the bad blood Sox Yankees rivalry to be brought back. If they threw it Doogie there, all like the doors, the floodgates are going to open. Like shit's going to go down back and forth. Who are they going to throw? Like stuff could have gone down. It didn't happen like that. I wish we could have seen it just as a fan, but
do you think it would have been kind of a little bit cringe, like a little bit cringe from the Red Sox perspective because they're like 16 games behind the Yankees and the Yankees are just dominating the entire league this year and the Red Sox like got upset.
No. You got to stand your ground. Like if you want to be the best, you got to go after the best. You got to protect yourself.
Yeah,
you
how many times have the Pirates?
Gordo, you said stand your ground. You asked me if the thing I wanted to Verdugo was legal, and I was like, depends where you're at. All right, anyway, keep going. What were you saying?
I want Big Braves take.
I'm sort of on the same wavelength as Sammy where, you know, it's an action speak louder than words kind of thing. But in the moment, I'm with you, Gordo, that there should have been some kind of response. I mean, look down the roster. I mean, maybe in the bullpen staff, not a ton of names that have played with Verdugo. Because honestly, the only salty exit that we saw between Verdugo and the Sox was with the manager, Alex Cora. And Cora isn't out there throwing pitches. You know, he could have directed Bayo being like, hey, next time he comes up, throw at him. But Bayo was already in trouble. So, I mean, we did expect that no one was going to respond. And you got to keep in mind with Cora, Cora's someone that stays out of getting into brawls or any heated moments like that. Go back to the ALCS in 21 when Erod is pointing at his watch and Cora's saying, hey, stop that. Don't do that. So I think to expect nothing to respond is more realistic. Every Sox fan would agree that Verdugo went way over the line in terms of like celebrating it. But everyone kind of knew that the entire roster is buddy-buddy with him, so no one's going to do anything. And Cora, it stays out of those moments. So, you know, I would have loved to have seen them throw at him, but realistically, I knew that nothing was going to happen.
Yeah. Joe, and to your point, I don't think that Cora staying out of those things is like a scared thing or like a, you know, fear of conflict.
No, not at all.
Like, don't give them any juice.
He's an action speak louder than words. So he's probably, if someone asked him, like in his post game, being like, are you glad now that you didn't throw at Verdugo? He's like, yeah, because the actions of seeing him only get two hits on Saturday and Sunday is a better response than throwing at him.
Right. And you know, when he has kind of like, you know, not an eloquent way of saying this, but when he has talked shit, it's normally after the fact. Like, it's over. We've won. Now you can talk your shit. It's not like, you know, in the moment or, you know, he gets heated once in a while, but it's not like, you know, Aaron Judge doing the New York thing in the middle of that series with the Red Sox and then it coming back to haunt him immediately, which was awesome. 211 batting average in the postseason. No big deal. But yeah, like I like how Cora, when he does talk his shit, it's like he's the winner. Therefore, he is able to talk his shit. That's the right way to do it, I guess.
I think I speak for all of us when I say that even though I would have liked to see them retaliate, take some action, I would much rather see them win both those games than throw at them and they lose both or they split. Give me the wins. Let them beat the Yankees in the series. Send the Yankees home unhappy. Doogie has that great game in the first game, and yet he still can't leave this series with a smile on his face. I think that's a good thing. But to get to the point that I was about to make before, why does that game happen? It was Brian Bayo on the mound again, and yet again, another tough start for him. He goes 4 2/3, 6 hits, 5 runs, 4 of which were earned. The one unearned was when he dropped the ball on the play at first base, being tossed the ball. Walked 3 and he struck out 5. So the walk numbers are staggering, and he was talking about it after the game, talking about how much his pitches are moving. It's hard to control him, but he's walked multiple guys in 9 of his last 10 starts, and he's walked 3 in 4 of his last 5 starts. So you've got a tangible thing here. I mean, the Andrew Bailey model is first pitch strikes, don't give them base runners for free. And Bayo's having trouble with it, and it's something that if the Red Sox want to make a legitimate run at this thing, especially with, and I know Cooper Criswell battled and they won his start, but he's not like a force of a, like, he's not generally the guy you want in your five man rotation. You need Bayo to be better. You can't.
Criswell's good in his role. I agree. He's good in his role. He's not a guy you want to see.
Right. And he's good in his role if the other guys are stepping up and like your bullpen can pick you up in the Criswell days when he goes four or five innings and you hope that he lets up two or fewer or whatever in those four innings. But if Bayo is not going to be completing five innings because he's walking three guys, if Bayo's going to be letting four or five runs in per start and you're going to be wasting your Chase Anderson day cleaning up after Brian Bayo, it not only hurts you in those games, but hurts you in other games because you're wasting other relievers now because Chase Anderson's not available. You just need Bayo to be better. His ERA is up to five. I feel like we talked about this on the last show, but I expect so much more from him. And it's not just because he got that contract. It's because we've seen better from him already in his career. The Yankees were the team that he crushes, and it didn't happen this series.
Yeah, Gordo, two things. First, when you mention Bayo not going deep into games or anyone not going deep into games, affecting them immediately after, we saw that in game two. Justin Slayton went out there for a third inning. That never happens. Like, we don't often see that. Great job. He succeeded and it wasn't an issue, but that's not ideal. Second thing, most of Bayo's starts this year, when they've been bad, we've kind of found a way to look at it and be like, all right, this makes sense. Like, I see what went wrong here. There's a silver lining. This one was just ugly. Like, not much good to take out of that one. And I wonder if Andrew Bailey, Red Sox pitching coach, gives him the like flush this one down the toilet kind of thing with that game, or if he's going to like go back and pick through it. That sounds like a nightmare to do, but we'll see. He needs to be kind of a lot better, not just a little better, a lot better. 5 ERA on the dot, like you said. Yuck. 4.71 FIP, a little better, still not great. Just needs to see more from Bayo. He has some decently favorable matchups coming up. Nothing, not like the White Sox, like we said, or Oakland, but you know, teams that he should pitch well against. So these are big starts early-ish in the season for Bayo. We got to see if he can step up.
What's funny is you say White Sox or Oakland, and those are the teams. Those are two teams that have gotten him this year. It's like for him, it just, and we've talked about it. You in particular are big on the big game Bayo thing, and it really is true because I don't know, this year kind of just hasn't been good for the most part. But even when he's at his best, it's like the bigger games, the better opponents, he goes out there and he gets, and then the ones you think he can just cruise through, he doesn't. But he is going to be going in this Blue Jays series, I believe. We'll find out in the series preview.
Third, right?
Yeah, you're right. Okay. He is going. So we will see him again in the upcoming series. We'll see if he can right the ship against the Blue Jays. But
yeah, the other thing about a big game that Sammy's talking about is this was technically a big game. Like the first game of the season against your arch rival, everyone hypes it up. And the reason you sign Bayo and the reason you sign Bayo and you basically label him as the ace is because you want him to pitch well in these types of scenarios. And not only was it ugly, Sammy, the fact is that he got punched around and you expect so much better than your ace. I mean, the dude hasn't gotten through seven innings at all this year. So that's why it's more concerning that he pitches in this big game, but he continues to struggle. That's where you really have to worry if you still have the label as ace for Brian Bayo.
That's a damning statistic. He hasn't gone through seven once this year, and he's your operative ace. I think we can all agree that Hauk is the ace now, but you know, Bayo's the one being treated and paid like an ace. So yeah, man, need to see more from him. And you're right, Joe, he got punched around and it was fast. That unraveled quickly. He didn't like, it wasn't back and forth. It was down the drain really quick. Kind of.
And unlike the White Sox series where he goes four scoreless and then it just unravels, like this thing, it was just kind of from the jump and it just continued. And that seven inning stat is like, it's even more concerning when you think about the type of pitcher he is. He's not one of those guys that's going to try to get double digit strikeouts. And those guys have a tendency to run up pitch counts and not go as deep into the games. Like, this is a guy who's going to live with the ball on the ground, getting those sinkers and changeups, hit them into the dirt. You can get quick outs that way. But when you're going to walk three plus guys to start, which, as I said, he's done that three out of his last four starts, he's walked three or more guys, and in one of them, he walked four. Like, you're not going to go deep into games like that. You're going to allow a lot of runs like that. You're going to be in high stress situations throughout the game like that. So obviously, they won the series. It's great. Like, I feel really good about things and yeah, all that. But yeah, Bayo, for them to get where they need to go is going to need to be a lot better. Because even if the Red Sox are in a position to buy, I wouldn't expect them to be one of those teams that goes all in on some super high-end starting pitcher rental to push them over the top. No, if the Red Sox are going to get a second frontline guy to pair with Tanner Houck, it's going to be because one of Nick Pivetta or Brian Bayo stepped up into that role. So we've got to hope we see that moving forward. But to talk about some of the things that went well in this series and have been going well, I mean, there's kind of three. I mean, we could talk all day about Jarren Duran and why he should be an all-star. I mean, we could literally just like have Tristan Casas read off all the stats that he reads off on Nesson and ESPN about why Jarren Duran is an all-star. And I talked about it with Bradford on the radio. I mean, when you're top five, I believe, in the American League in WAR, when you're second in doubles, first in triples, I'm just rattling these off my head. He was sixth in stolen bases, I think, but I don't know anymore. He may have jumped up that list. He's in the 95th percentile and outs above average. Like, you've got a true star, a true all-star brewing in Jarren Duran. But actually, I want to talk about some of these other guys, some of the guys that have stepped up, because Jarren Duran's been doing it all year. I want to talk about Sedan Rafaela, Emmanuel Valdez, David Hamilton, those three guys that, I mean, Rafaela has been getting better month over month. Emmanuel Valdez was not hitting, got sent down, got called up. I've got some stats on him. And then David Hamilton was the, what's it called? Not scarecrow. What's it called? Not voodoo doll.
Punching bag.
Punching bag. He was the Red Sox Twitter punching bag.
He was the scapegoat.
Yeah, like that's he was making errors at short. He was not hitting. We didn't understand why he was still up. They optioned Valdez over him, and I know a lot of people wondered about that. I remember we had a conversation. Who do they option, Dahlbeck or Hamilton? And that conversation in my head sounds absolutely insane right now. I guess we can start with David Hamilton. The stat I've got on him is that in his last 30 games, he's hitting .330 with an .891 OPS, and in those 30 games, he has 14 stolen bases.
Dude, we get credit for this. We were complaining for so long, like, why does he not go when he's on base? And then, like, we don't actually get credit. If anyone thinks we're serious, we don't get credit. But it's awesome to see. He's going. He's got amazing speed. He's using it. It's so simple. There's no analysis for this. That's it.
I guess, praise the Lord that he has started actually utilizing his greatest asset. And he's still not a perfect defender or anything close to it, but he's actually been able to play shortstop, and you're not realizing that there's anything wrong there for the most part. Come on, dude.
The throws, dude, when he throws.
Okay, I know it doesn't look
not
pretty.
His fault. He's not a shortstop. It's just when he throws.
But dude, you have
he's got to throw up.
I know it looks ugly. It's like the Grissom thing right
sometimes.
Now, though. Dom
like, Smith has had like 9 really good picks.
Yeah.
Like, oh, good play. Like, he's made some bad plays, but he's made a lot of nice picks. I don't want to make fun of Hamilton. He's been awesome lately.
I know it looks bad, but like over the last maybe 3 weeks or so, there's been like maybe a couple, but
he's been better.
Like an everyday thing.
Yeah, he's been better. His arm strength is kind of what worries me, because it looks like he puts everything into every throw. And maybe that's just me not seeing it well. Maybe he doesn't do that and just how it looks, but at least he's getting it to the first baseman. He's not like throwing it into the, he's not like hooking it or letting the ball like go into the dugout. If you got to bounce it, you got a major league caliber first baseman allegedly over there. So,
hey, he's great at picking. He's great at picking.
No. Smith is like, yeah, he's had some weird plays, but I think he's pretty average defensively.
He's like good at some parts of playing first and not good at others. It's weird.
It's the PFPs.
Yes, it's working with the pitcher that has been odd. But the picking, God, he's made crazy good picks. I don't know if he's missed a pick.
Scoops, big scoops. He did. He missed the very first one, and I remember thinking, damn, I hope he's not a bad defensive baseman. And then he proceeded to do all of the picks, every pick you've ever seen, but then mess up every flip. So I don't know. I have no clue if Dom Smith is the greatest defensive first baseman ever or the worst defensive first baseman ever. And as always, the truth is somewhere in the middle.
But either way, man, David, like at the plate, I don't know. I remember we were on radio at Fenway. It might have been our first Fenway radio session of the year. And Rob said, yeah, I think David, I actually believe in David Hamilton's bat. And I was like, are you crazy?
Oh, yeah. So I said the same thing. And then I said, no, never mind. I take it back. But and now I don't get credit for it because I jumped off that ship. So no credit for me. Rob was right, though, man. I mean, he hit all in AAA. Like he was really good.
Oh, that's you can't say that, though, because Bob hits in AAA.
No, I know. But Bob is like, you can look at Bob and see why he fails in Major League Baseball. With Hamilton, it was kind of like, what's going on? It's not like he's striking out all the time. Like the reason you use Bob there is because, you know, great AAA numbers, but even in AAA, he's striking out 35% of the time or whatever. So that's not going to translate. Hamilton had good numbers, and then the peripherals looked like they would translate, and now they finally are. So, by the way, he's got some pop, too. Not a ton of home runs, but he's like gap-to-gap power. Speed is unbelievable. Red Sox win the Renfro trade. Remember when everyone was freaking out about that? Like Hunter Renfro, some great player, and then they replaced him with Adam Duvall, who's exactly the same.
Yeah, except it took him a year. Remember, they initially replaced him with Jackie and Christian Arroyo in right field. That was brutal.
Oh yeah, Christian Arroyo. Hope he's doing well.
A right fielder. He's really
anyway.
Right
David fielder. Hamilton. We're going all over the place, but David Hamilton's really turning into a nice player. When Vaughn Grissom comes back, what do you do? Because Hamilton, I can't take him out of the lineup right now unless like Chris Sale is pitching or like some nasty lefty.
Well, it's not just Vaughn Grissom as well. There's so many other guys that we can get into. Like if you're talking really, really big picture, Trevor Story's still under contract. Mm-hmm. And Manuel Valdez, who I'm sure we're going to sing his praises to a little bit later. And Vaughn Grissom, who we still, all three of us, expect to turn things around when he's fully 100% and a little bit older. It's a serious logjam. I know we've had logjam conversations over the number of weeks, but that's for big picture stuff. The here and the now is you have too many infielders, and one of them is going to have to be on the outside looking in, and they need to decide that sooner rather than later.
Well, to me, with the Grissom thing, like as much as I want to see him get every day at bats, and to be honest with you, these situations so often work out themselves, but you've got, and I'll give you my Valdez stat here. This is his June right now. His June, he is hitting .361 with a .439 OBP, .778 slug. He's a .1217 OPS. He's been an extra base hit machine. But with Hamilton and Valdez, they're lefties. With Grissom, he's a righty. They don't have very many righties in the lineup. Obviously, I want to see him get more at bats than just against lefties. But if Hamilton and Valdez continue to hit like this, as you said, Sammy, you can't really take guys out of the lineup that are hitting like that if you're in the race. If you're not in the race, you can give the at-bats to guys who you want to see. But I think for the sake of discussion here, I mean, they're playing great baseball. I think we got to talk like they're in the race. They are right now in the race.
I like Valdez off the bench. He's got really, really good numbers as a pinch hitter, which is like the hardest thing to do is pinch hit Major League Baseball. So good little weird quirk to his game. And he looks like a fire hydrant.
He does. He has he just does.
Fire hydrant body. Yeah. Not as much as Alejandro Kirk, but.
No, he's more. Kirk is too thick to be a fire hydrant. He's more of a. Yeah, he's a stump because Vogelback is a fridge because he's a little bit taller. Kirk is too short to be a fridge. Kirk is a mini fridge.
Yeah, we'll break down the Blue Jays rosters. Interesting body types.
The other one here, and I guess to build off of what Joe was talking about, you could put Hamilton at short if you're going to commit to Rafaela in center field, which I think they want to do. Obviously, that gets a little bit more complicated when you have Abreu and O'Neill and Yoshida all healthy at the same time. The solution here literally may be to go like take us back in time a month and a half and go back to the whole do we reduce Yoshida's playing time conversation, because that could be where this heads. But here's Sidon Rafael's average by month. In April, he hit 167. In May, he hit 239. And in June so far, he's hitting 333. He's 11 for his last 19 in his last five games. And he has three hits in back-to-back games, of course, both of which were against the Yankees. He's hitting the ball harder as of late. He's obviously a flawed hitter, but when you get any production at all from Rafaela, you're going to take it. And when you're getting three hit nights, when you're getting a 300 plus batting average month, because he's going to play defense. He's always going to do that. That's something that can be there consistently. Like, hitting goes up and down. Defense is stable. So if you're getting the hitting from him, he's a really valuable asset. And when he's getting on base in that nine hole, and then that gets followed up by Duran and or Hamilton getting on base, you wreak havoc. And you saw it in that third game. I cannot get over the stolen bases from these guys. It is just the athleticism. It's the one thing that the Red Sox can go into any series with and say, we have this over our opponent. We can be more athletic than you. They can say that in almost any series they play, and it's because of that pocket in the lineup. So I really like what I've seen from Sidon. That's the synopsis.
And the beauty, at least offensively, is that in the beginning of the year, he was always a pull hitter. He was always pulling it. Now he's using the opposite field. Now he's showing bunts. Exactly what we were talking about a couple weeks ago is these different scenarios. He's showing you what he can do. So I'm right with you. I'm loving what I'm seeing from Sidon.
He's also not like swinging out of his shoes every single time, which was kind of a glaring issue to my amateur eye. Just seemed like he was trying to hit the ball as hard as humanly possible every single time, which sounds great in a vacuum, but it's not at the major league level. So, yeah, good adjustments. Just keep it up. He has the lowest bar on the team when it comes to offense. Like, we are not asking for a lot. The defense is unreal. So the offense doesn't have to be that great to have value. It's, again, more simple stuff.
And it's kind of, it's crazy the way the lineup is set up, where he's your number nine guy, and then you go right back to the top with Duran, and then over the past couple of games, it's Hamilton. Like, that's an insane, that's a different kind of 1-2-3.
Right, punch. So Rafaela, 85th percentile, and that speed, base running speed, so he's, you know, how do you put that into context?
Top 15% in baseball. Yeah, and
top 15% speed. In baseball, and then Jaron Duran is 94th percentile, so he's freakishly fast. And then Hamilton, I don't have his numbers, but I have to assume he's probably in between those guys. He might even be faster than Duran.
He might be the fastest.
Yeah, he might be. Yeah. Anyway, you got unbelievable speed when the lineup goes from 9-1 and 2. And then other guys like Wong, who can run well. Willier can run a little bit. So a lot of good speed. I like it. It's not, they even mentioned this on the broadcast, it's not your typical Red Sox team. Red Sox are normally like a doubles, home runs, they take advantage of Fenway Park kind of team, but these guys, burners on the bases.
Yeah, and on the Rafaela thing, we were talking about that bar. I don't know if this is a credit to Red Sox fans or if people just haven't been paying very much attention this year, but I just remember with Casas, people were so fast to write him off, and I don't know if people just understand that with Sidon, you're getting so much beyond the bat, that the bat you can give time. I haven't seen almost any serious complaining, doubting about his value as a player. There's been like obvious like questions about the bat, but they're always brought with, but he's such a great, like everyone, people seem to understand. And with him, he's just going to continue to grow as a hitter. Development, as the Red Sox love to say, continues at the major league level, and it's not linear. So we're going to see how he grows over the course of the rest of the season, over the offseason leading into next year. Like, who's this guy going to be by year three, year four in the major leagues, like as a hitter?
I hope he's like, I think the best comparison for what you can hope for realistically is Kevin Kiermaier right-handed, you know, like great defender in the outfield, one of the best in the world defensively. And then, you know, his bat is fine. It's not a, automatic
out of 12 games, as you'll hear in the series preview.
It's what? What'd you say?
Is that has not been fine in the last 12 games, as you will hear prime, in the series.
Prime preview. Kevin Kiermaier, I should prime say. Kevin Kiermaier in his prime, we're talking. Like
I like that.
Three, four years ago. That's what you're hoping for. You know, he's not, yeah. It's not like he comes up to the plate and you're like, okay, this inning's over. This guy strikes out all the time. You know, there's certain players who you feel like that about. but not Sedan and not Kevin Kiermaier.
Yep. And speaking of Kiermaier, we do got to get to the series preview. But last note before we get there, last guy I want to shout out here, because it feels a little bit like Connor Wong, or like I guess before tonight, it kind of felt to the naked eye like Connor Wong was cooling down a little bit, not hitting as much as he was to start the season. But it's just not the case, man. He's hitting 333 with an 857 OPS for the season in 206 plate appearances. He's been like the no doubt about it starting catcher of the Red Sox. 206 plate appearances and having those numbers, I mean, there's some good catchers, so I understand why he's probably not going to make the All-Star team, but those numbers are All-Star caliber numbers. So,
he should fuck. What's the argument against him not
there's
making
so
the All-Star?
Many, there are
it's
so
literally
many
just
guys.
The competition.
There's that's so cool. Many
okay,
guys.
Adley, in the American League, Adley?
Sal.
Of course. Who?
Sal Perez is having a good year.
Ah, but does he even catch anymore? He's like a DH.
But he's well respected around like players. So
yeah. Okay, if we're talking, but like let's
Cal Raleigh.
Pretend it's a meritocracy. Raleigh's hitting like 207. He's got good power, but like, come on.
I agree, Wong's having a better year, but it's also name recognition a little bit.
No, I'm saying, but if it was a meritocracy, would have to be Wong.
Jeffers has cooled down a little bit. He's actually not even. Yeah, maybe he was hurt. I don't know. Whatever.
Wong's got the bazooka.
He's got all-star numbers. I would love to see him on the all-star team. The competition actually is not quite as good as it was the last time we had this discussion. I will say that.
Wong's on fire. By the way, we're forgetting one friggin' shout-out that we got to give. How about our boy Zach Kelly? Bases loaded. Dude, let me set the scene. Pretend I'm Will Fleming. 4-3. Red Sox are winning. Bases loaded. Some hideous defense. So it's not just like the Yankees loaded the bases. The Red Sox shot themselves in the foot. Classic. Bases loaded. One run game. In comes Zach Kelly with no outs. Nothing. Yankees got shit. That was awesome. And then the big scream coming off the mound. He's probably yelling, thank you. That was the best Zach Kelly moment so far.
imagine he's just walking off the mound and the camera pans to him because he's screaming and you just read the mouth. You know, when the camera goes slow motion, you can kind of make out what he's saying. And it goes, thank you.
But then he just goes blank because it's thank you, period.
Yes.
He did say post game because he joined Joe and Will in the booth. He said it's the biggest moment of his career and the best moment of his career so far.
That was sick. I mean, they put him in a really, really bad spot.
And
I mean, like, yeah, I mean, they're probably not telling him like, yo, you can't give up a run here. They're probably like, hey, limit the damage. And he's like, say less. Boom. That fucking sweeper. Gross, dude. Oh, my God. That's like 92 inches of horizontal movement, probably like 16, but we'll call it 92.
Bases loaded, no outs, and you're up by one run. A sack fly ties it. And like, yeah, some people might just be, oh, the Sox won the game. Whatever. The game does not go the way it did.
Yeah, if we're talking turning points for the season, if we're talking turning points for the season, like not just the win, that moment specifically, if the Sox can capitalize in this next stretch, everyone will look towards that moment when Kelly came in, bases loaded, no out. He shuts it down. They will look back on that moment as the turning point.
It's going to be on the World Series DVD, Big Brave.
And even, oh, Jesus, even more DVD. Impressive, what is the one thing that has plagued Zach Kelly this year?
Control.
And he comes in with the bases loaded, cool as a cucumber.
And starts at 3-0.
Yeah, I was about to say, first batter, 3-0.
That's true. I totally forgot about that. That feels like it was a million years
and
ago.
Glaber takes two straight, first a fastball down the middle, then a cutter basically down the middle, and then swings at a nasty sweeper that it wasn't in the zone, but he got him to swing.
I need to see one of those tweets from one of those big time stat dudes that says how effective Zach Kelly's sweeper is compared to like the other best pitches in the league. You know what I'm talking about? Does that make any sense?
Yeah. It's like when we had those conversations in the offseason about Cutter's fastball being comparable to like Garrett Cole's. Yeah. We need one of those.
He went from maybe a depth starter, possibly a fifth starter. It's like, this guy could be a number two, maybe a three at worst, from that one tweet.
Yeah, dude, that was great.
I love the internet, man. The internet is so funny. How people
go wild,
like,
in the offseason, man.
Like, narrative, yeah, true. Also in the winter.
It's all narratives all offseason, man, because the stats are final. They don't change.
It's also like no Patriots, like the Patriots being completely irrelevant. And then all of our brains are just like, all right, the only thing we got now is like regular season basketball and hockey, two sports where they do not try in the regular season. And then the Red Sox offseason. So we're just like, hyper-focused. See, if the Patriots had made the playoffs, people would have had more sane Red Sox takes. It's probably the craziest thing I've ever said on the show.
No, I see where you're going with it, though. It is true. If the Patriots make the playoffs, more people talk about the Patriots. If more people talk about the Patriots, we stop having ridiculous takes about the Red Sox because it's all we think about sitting up at night. I don't know. We got to get to the series preview. So I'm just going to get right into it. We are watching the Red Sox go to Toronto to play the 35 and 36 Blue Jays, who are in fourth place in the American League. They did just grab 2 of 3 from the Cleveland Guardians. So good series victory for them. They're 8-7 in June. And the pitching matchups. Oh, Joe, you're right. We got to pick a series MVP. Oof. I didn't start the pitching matchup, so the series preview has not started. Quick votes for series MVP.
You have to rewind. You have to go. Okay, we're back at the series recap.
Series MVP. I'm going to give my vote. And I'm going to give it to Zach Kelly, because that game does not get won if he doesn't come in there and do what he did. You kind of felt like best case scenario was one run scores, and most likely scenario is they get a couple across. That's not to say anything against Zach. He's a great pitcher, but it's just that situation is impossible, and he did the impossible. So I'm giving my vote to Zach. Even though it was in a loss, and he also threw two awesome innings in the first game. So Zach had a great series. Super happy for him. He gets my vote for series MVP.
I wouldn't say series MVP. That was definitely the biggest moment of the series, like biggest singular moment, no doubt. I'm kind of torn. Sedan, 2 3-hit games in a row, but they were kind of quiet 3-hit games in a row. It sounds weird, but they were. He was at the bottom of the lineup, and they're, you know, not huge hits. The other one I have is Duran. Duran had kind of his classic really good series. This is a tough one. It's kind of spread around. Criswell really stepped up. Kenley, also underrated moment, calling Alex Cora saying like, hey, I'm in the bullpen, put me in. That was a pretty cool storyline from this series. Oh, man. Wong, you could go with. I don't know. Joe, who do you have? I can't.
I think I'm going to go with Duran on this one. I think just the way he started things and his base running in particular, I think has inspired everyone else. Talking Hamilton, Rafaela, and then in this third game where he and Hamilton just ran around the bases and set a franchise record for stolen bases as a team in one game. I think that is that clears the hurdle for me, is setting a record and Duran being a part of it. So my vote goes to Jaron Duran.
Okay. I could see that. Would you be open to a David Hamilton vote? I feel like that's kind of, how do you do? He had a bad first game. Can't go him. I'll go Duran. It's Duran by default. It's not like a runaway, no pun intended, for Duran. And I feel like every time they win a series, I pick Duran, which, interesting. He's good. He's the catalyst. So, yeah, I'll go Duran for this. But biggest moment, definitely our guy, Zach Kelly, front of the program.
And an honorary, not a vote, but just an honorary, because Duran is the series MVP, the PT series MVP, but an honorary salute to Alex Verdugo for waking the boys up. So he gets a fake vote from the boys for waking the boys up. So congratulations, Jaron Duran, who seems to win all of our PT series MVP awards because he impacts the game in so many ways. But yeah, Jaron Duran is that dude. All right, Sammy, make a fast forward noise for me. Wow. Okay. Are you ready for the pitching matchups?
Yeah.
Game one. We've got Nick Pivetta versus Yusei Kikuchi. Nick Pivetta has a 3.88 ERA coming off a tough start against the Phillies, in which the Red Sox won, but he went 4 innings, 4 runs. He walked 4 and struck out 4. Kikuchi has a 3.26 ERA. He's having a really good year after he didn't reserve a sushi restaurant for Shohei Ohtani. He is coming off five scoreless with four walks and five strikeouts versus the Brewers. Game two, you got Tanner Houck versus Chris Bassett. Tanner Houck has a 2.08 ERA, also coming off one of his quote-unquote worst starts of the year in which he threw a quality start, six innings, three runs, five strikeouts against the Phillies. Chris Bassett has a 3.56 ERA. I had to like double-check this thing like 10 times because he literally had the same exact line as Kikuchi, also five scoreless with four walks and five strikeouts against the Brewers. Same thing. Game three, you got Brian Baio coming off of 4 2/3, five runs, four of them earned, three walks and five strikeouts against the Yankees. His ERA for the season is at an even five versus Kevin Gausman, who historically has given the Sox fits, although last season they really got him good at one point. He's got a 4.08 ERA on the season, so not his best work. Maybe some regression as he ages. He's coming off 5 1/3 innings of three-run ball and six strikeouts versus the Cleveland Guardians. Hitters. Blue Jays, you think normally as like a big bopping team, but this year they're really not. They don't have a single player with an OPS over 800 this year, and that's not even like qualified players or anything. They literally do not have a player in their organization that has an OPS over 800. Vlad Jr. hitting 284 with a 780 OPS and seven homers. Bo Bichette, we think of him as a star, but he's only hitting 237 with a 628 OPS and four homers. Old friend Justin Turner has not continued his Red Sox success into his Toronto days. He's hitting 225 with a 659 OPS and four homers. George Springer has been atrocious, a 579 OPS for the season. More recently, Dalton Varsho has been good. I remember we used to have those Varsho versus Yoshida conversations, and we always used to argue for Yoshida, but Varsho at this point, definitely the better player. Great defender in the outfield and has an 852 OPS in his last 14 games. And then I told you I had that Kiermaier thing. He has a 368 OPS in his last 12 games.
Ooh, so cold.
That's where we are at. Joe, do we have a standings update for series predictions? Damn, Sammy got this one, didn't he?
That's right, because Sammy increased his lead. He correctly guessed that the Sox would win 2 out of 3. So he gets himself his 9th point on the season. He still leads it. Pat and Gordo each predicted that they would lose 2 out of 3. They still remain tied for 2nd with 4.
You know, I thought them getting 1 out of 3 to get them back at 500 was the lock of the year, and it was not. Just as I thought, and we'll jumping ahead here, but I thought that Devers hitting a home run against the Yankees was the lock of the year, and it was not. So, but series prediction wise, again, I'm going to go first, so I can't flub this. I'm going to predict that they're going to win 2 out of 3 and continue to build here. I think they're going to win the first two, and we're going to be feeling really good about ourselves. And then they're going to lose the Baio versus Gausman one, which is going to make us halt the brakes a little bit before our podcast coming out later this week. So 2 out of 3, win, win, loss.
All right, Sammy, what do you got?
Okay, so I went back to my strategy that got me the lead initially last week, where I basically just predicted the most unlikely thing without going too crazy. So I figured, okay, they'll win 2 out of 3 just because, of course, they'd win 2 out of 3. Everyone's hurt. The Yankees are the best Yankees team they've been in years. Everyone's picking the Yankees to crush the Red Sox. Therefore, the Red Sox will win 2 out of 3, and they did. So I got the Red Sox losing 2 out of 3 to the Blue Jays. I think they win the first game. No chance that Houck loses to the Blue Jays. Give me a break there. And then they lose the last game. So I got, yeah, loss, win, loss.
Okay. All right. Not too bad.
I can't go as far as to say that Houck will lose to them. That's where I draw the line. But
just predict them to get swept, Sammy. Just do it.
No. I have to pick something that's very unlikely, but not crazy. That's been my strategy. Unlikely, but sane.
I'm glad that that losing 2 out of 3 is now in your head as unlikely, but not insane. We're making progress. They're making hot. Progress they as just, an organization.
They just took two series against two of the best teams in Major League Baseball. The Blue Jays are maybe the single biggest underachiever of the year, them and the Astros. And the Red Sox are hot. The Blue Jays are not. And therefore, the Blue Jays win 2 out of 3. Sorry.
Yeah, I think the Sox go in at the right time, especially having the energy, winning the series against Philly and then against the Yankees. I agree with Gordo that they're going to win 2 out of 3. My order, though, is going to be different. I think they are going to lose the first game because it's still like Vlad Jr. and a bunch of big hitters out there that can burn you if you make a mistake. And we know Pavetta is prone to make that big mistake. So I think they lose game one. I agree with you guys. No way Tanner Houck loses this game. And then third game, I think this is a good redemption game for Brian Baio. I think he'll find a way to redeem himself against a struggling Toronto lineup, as you rallied all the dimensions on the numbers there, Gordo. So I'm going to go 2 out of 3, and they lose game one.
I want someone to come into one of these predictions and be like, yeah, there's no way they win the Houck start. Just no chance.
Nah, you'd have to not.
He
have
hasn't
won.
Done anything to make to prove us wrong.
Yeah.
By the way, Blue Jays game one starter Kikuchi, we have to mention the weirdest sleep schedule of all time. He sleeps on the night before his starts. He claims that he sleeps between 13 and 14 hours. So, if he's ever on a playoff team on the road, probably there will be a fan who will do the fire alarm at like 2 in the morning or 3 in the morning. That trick.
Oh, have to. Dude, that would work on Kikuchi in a way that it's never worked on any athlete ever.
It certainly did not work on the Florida Panthers for the Bruins. Someone did that to them and the Panthers just kicked the shit out of the Bruins. It was awful. But anyway, baseball. Yeah. Alarm trick for Kikuchi. Don't do it if you know where he lives in Toronto.
Pull the fire alarm at his literal house.
Do not go to Yusei Kikuchi's home for the Sox.
Yes. Don't do it. Good also, of note, Nick Pivetta and the Blue Jays have that history. They don't exactly like each other, particularly Vlad and Alejandro Kirk. So something to keep an eye on.
What was that? What was that beef again?
He like threw kind of inside to Alejandro Kirk and the Blue Jays dugout got all mad. I don't know. It was stupid.
Everything is inside to Alejandro Kirk. His fucking pits hang over the plate. How do you not throw inside to Alejandro Kirk?
Everything's inside. It's too bad they DFA'd Vogelback, man. Those two were a great pair, them and Manoah and Vlad. Yeah. Oh my God, Team Fatso over there. Jeez.
Yeah, they're fucking.
Joe. Team. Big Brave, that's not here, Big Brave. You tell me, what's it time for?
Well, it's time to somehow make a transition out of that quip from Sammy and get into Crystal Bomb.
Bomb it.
So, no home runs of significance from everyone on the board. Pat went with David Hamilton. Nope. Rafi Devers. Nope. And Tyler O'Neill did not go yard. So
did anyone go yard? Did they hit a home run?
I don't believe they hit a home run in the series.
No, they didn't. They didn't. Unless they.
Yeah.
No, not in game one. Yeah, no. No home runs. Certainly not last night.
Yeah.
I should have picked like Nick Pivetta or something. Ugh.
Yeah. Okay. So no home runs on the board. That means Gordo still leads it with 10. Sammy is in second with 7. Pat is in third with 3. And then me with the single point in the basement. So let's start it off with Sammy here. Let's give you the first crack at it. What do you say?
Okay, I'm going to go with okay, I can't pick Devers and I can't pick Sedan. I will go with I'm trying to stall. I don't know who I go? Want to take. Yeah, you go.
Yeah, Gordo, make your pick while he's thinking.
All right, this is an easy one for me. I'm going with Captain Canada, Tyler O'Neill. To hit a home run back home in Canada. He screams, guy who pounds one over the left field wall in Toronto. Give me Tyler O'Neill. There's only one lefty on the mound in this series, but he took the day off on Sunday. So hopefully get him in 3 of these games. If not, then I'll get 2 out of them. So yeah, give me Tyler O'Neill.
All right. Not bad. Sammy, you got your pick now?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. You guys are going to think I was thinking of O'Neill, but he's from Vancouver. He's from like 7 hours away from Toronto. He doesn't give a shit.
It's for the country.
It's a huge country. It's like if you played a game in California and they're like, Gordo, this is a hometown game for you, huh?
Well, you know what? If I played baseball in like Mexico.
Yeah. And then you went to California. You'd be like, oh,
I'm back home.
Yeah. I'm from the, yeah. This is home. Gordo, you grew up around the palm trees and beautiful scenery. All right. I want to pick Yoshida. but he got hit in the hand at the end of the game. So I'm not going to pick Yoshida. I'll go with Jarren Duran. He's making hard contact. Hasn't hit a ton of home runs, but he plays every game, so I know I'm going to get that out of him. I like him hitting a home run off of Gausman. He's going to mislocate that stupid sinker, splitter, or whatever the frick that is that always kills the Red Sox, and Duran's going to just get it over the wall. It's going to be like a laser beam. It's just going to get over the wall, just by a little bit.
I can very much picture that. Him in Toronto, just a yep.
And he's going to sprint. He's going to be sprinting full speed, and then he'll slow down after he rounds first. He'll be like, oh, yep. It's out.
He'll pass second by the time it gets over the wall.
Yeah, he'll be like rounding third, and then the ball, which had an exit velocity of 111, will just be getting over the wall. He's that fast. So Duran's my pick.
Okay, all right. That's a good pick.
How are you going to match this?
I think I'm going to, you know, no pun intended, throw one out of left field here and go with Enmanuel Valdez. And I'll even, you know, I know you can't get double points on here, but I think the way he's been pinch hitting has been extremely effective. It's almost like eventually he's going to get that pinch hit home run. He might even get it when, because I assume he'll get a start at some point in this series. But I feel like Valdez might be a sneaky pick to go yard because he's been hitting the ball so well. He just hasn't gotten the at-bats to really drive that thing deep. So I'll go with Manu to drive one deep up north.
Manu? Is that a Manu name?
That's just a nickname I've heard Will Fleming say. So
Manu, dude, can we call him Manu? Here's his numbers this year as a where is it? Okay. As a pinch hitter, he's hitting 600, five at bats. He has three hits. Wow.
Hell yeah.
Double. So incredibly small sample size, but that's pinch hitting. Pinch hitting is always a small sample size. Who's the best Red Sox pinch
Matt
hitter?
Matt Stairs. Oh, Red Sox.
Stairs was great, but yeah, he was briefly.
Johnny Gomes?
Oh, yeah. Mike Karp. Got to be Mike Karp.
Oh, Karp, that's a good one. Good.
Karp was good. Moreland was good, too, when he wasn't starting. He was a good pinch hitter.
Oh, yeah.
Was that like when Hanley, before they DFA'd him out of nowhere?
I think one of his, I think Moreland had a pinch hit bomb in the World Series in 18.
Yeah, that was pinch hit, wasn't it?
It was. Okay.
I think it was.
Yeah. Pinch hitting is hard.
Yeah, man. All right. So, you go with Valdez. All right. I like it.
Did Pat tell us who he's picking? He can pick after.
Yeah. We can get that later.
All right.
We'll give him Yoshida.
No, we'll give him Pivetta because he's also home in his home country. So he can have Nick Pivetta and he can have Blue Jays sweep. I like that. All right, Sammy, what do we got? What do we got going on right now?
No New York Yankees in here because it's time for only winning. It's guys being dudes.
Ooh,
yeah, bro.
Oh, I like how you guys kind of like overlapped. It was like a crowd of people just like chilling at the same time.
We were crowd surfing past each other.
All right. So this is the first time we're seeing the Blue Jays this year. So
yeah,
need a player who played for the Red Sox and the Blue Jays. Joe, let's hear who you got.
Ooh, okay. So the obvious ones, let's just get it out of the way. The obvious ones are off the table. Roger Clemens, Justin Turner, you know.
Clemens is probably I would have accepted Clemens because that's like the third or fourth most known team for him. But continue. Sorry.
I'm going to go a little bit more obscure. Probably a forgotten Red Sox. Longtime Blue Jay, but probably a forgotten Red Sox. Kevin Pillar.
Nice.
Arguably, I would argue that he's been one of the top 10 defenders of the last 10 to 15 years. Like, the way he patrolled center field, I mean, it felt like he was making a wall grab or a diving play almost every single game. As I said, lifelong Blue Jay, joined the Sox in 2020 during the COVID year and probably was their best hitter, considering a roster that still had Bogarts and Martinez, JD, and Devers. But he was hitting the ball really well. And then the trade deadline came along. He went to Colorado. Spent some time in San Francisco, I believe. But a forgotten Red Sox and a longtime Blue Jay, Kevin Pillar.
He's killing it this year, dude. So he's with the Angels. probably nobody knows this because nobody watches the Angels, but he's with the Angels. 128 at bats. He's hitting 305 with 7 home runs, a 916 OPS, and a 155 OPS plus. Kevin Pillar has been on fire this year. Also, he was, let me get the right term. I believe he was DFA'd by the White Sox. Yeah, he was DFA'd by the Red Sox on April 26th. And as he's like leaving the facility, he did an interview with a different baseball podcast, which I thought was sick. And they were like, how you feeling? What's this like? Like, you're a veteran. And he was so honest. So great pick, Joe. I love Pilar's great, good player, great defender. Seems like a humble guy, too, that he did that interview. So Pilar, good pick. Gordo?
So we're going to be seeing the Blue Jays 3 more times this year. And there was no obvious pick for me because I've already used the Rajay Davis as a pick. So I'm not going to use him again. He would have been the obvious one for me. So I'm going to go a little bit different here. Different mold. And I'm going to shout out a couple of current Red Sox who you may have not known were Blue Jays. One of them, certainly, I feel like people would not know was a Blue Jay. One of them, maybe, if you were in tune with the game about 10 years ago. Rob Refsnyder and Liam Hendricks, both former Blue Jays. Did you know?
I didn't know that Refsnyder was on.
I knew about Refsnyder that he basically played forever AL. He's like the modern day Steve Pierce, but not Hendricks. No.
Interesting. You guys were 1-1 there. I remember Hendricks with the Blue Jays because I remember I didn't think he was any good, and then he got good and then went to the A's and he got great. But yeah, Refsnyder, I mean, it was literally only like 30 something at bats. Like, he barely played there. But yeah, shout out to our former Toronto Blue Jays, Rob Refsnyder. If you guys ever do that like jersey test in your head to like try to picture if a player would ever go somewhere, Rob Refsnyder does not pass the Blue Jays jersey test. I can't picture him in a Blue Jays uniform.
Yeah, I agree. Not a good fit.
Definitely fits better with the Red Sox.
I like it. I really didn't know that Refsnyder played for the Blue Jays. Well, I'm not going to go with Matt Dermody, the homophobic.
I saw that too, dude. I saw that.
I do want to comment. He's playing for... Oh, hold on, let me get the name. He's playing for the Toros de Tijuana in Mexico now. So Matt Dermody, universally disliked by Red Sox fans. He is having a great time in Tijuana. My pick. Oh, yeah, there's Refsnyder and the Blue Jays. Looks bad.
What is that? What number is that? Like 19?
I can't tell. Is the second number. I'll see if I can find it.
Whatever. All right. Sammy, your pick.
My pick. 2013 World Series champion Franklin Morales, left-handed relief pitcher.
Oh, my God.
Noteworthy because he had one of the nastiest pickoff moves I have ever seen in my life. It was like a rubber band. He would just like zip it over there. I don't know if he got anyone with it, but it was nasty as hell, and that's what I remember about him. And also, I don't understand how his elbow didn't explode every time he threw a pitch with his delivery. It was so, so incredibly violent. But yeah, you know, solid pitcher, nothing fantastic. I just kind of like the delivery, and I like how he does his cool little pickoff move. 2013, he had a 4.62 ERA. Not great with the Red Sox, but he was a guy. He was definitely on the team. He played for the team, and he was certainly there at the ballpark.
I really liked him because his name was Franklin. I enjoyed the name Franklin.
Franklin. I also want to mention another one. Do you guys remember George Kotaris?
Yes. Catcher? Yeah. He was like the guy to transition off of Mirabelli.
Yeah, and he was supposed to be, I don't want to jinx anything, but like really talented left-handed hitting catcher prospect, can't miss kind of guy. We got one of those now. But Kotaris, he did play in the majors, I believe, for the Red Sox and the Brewers.
Milwaukee.
Maybe Oakland as well. I might be misremembering the Oakland part, but Goro's just flashing pictures of Franklin Morales onto the screen.
Not knowing that I could just do that.
Yeah, no context, just showing us pictures of Franklin Morales. But yeah, that was just an interesting one. It kind of made me anxious thinking about it. I was like, oh, crap. I remember this guy. Wow, he actually played for a lot of teams. Red Sox, Brewers, Oakland, Kansas City, Cleveland, St. Louis, Toronto. way more teams than I thought he played for.
Were they all in the same year?
No, but here's an interesting theme. On the Red Sox, he wore two different jersey numbers. On the Brewers, he wore two different jersey numbers. And then that was it. Okay, so he played for all these different teams, but he had like a million different jersey numbers. That's my kind of guy. So George I don't know how to say it. Kataris. Oh, God. Gordo's now just, if you're listening, Gordo's showing us pictures of Alexi Ogando, the favorite player of this show. Him and his thing.
Should we move to some Nuff Said?
Let's do it.
I can go first because you already know what mine is. Just a quick synopsis of how this went down. So on the radio in the early afternoon, I did the Wasabi Challenge, and Rob announced that a player had agreed to do the Wasabi Challenge for the first time, and that player was Tristan Casas. So we're on the field. I'm on the field with Sammy later, and Bradford was not on the field. Casas is there. And as I said, I was like, you agreed to do the Wasabi Challenge? He said, I'll do anything for the camera. And he was not lying. Bradford showed up with the Wasabi, and Casas definitely like a little bit nervous to do it, as all of us were the first time and the second time and all times and beyond. Rob gave him a very healthy helping, but definitely check out the video on the Baseball Isn't Boring social accounts. That it's just like, it is just pure gold. I mean, I filmed the thing and I thought it was going to be like a 2-minute video. So I like was in like a crouching position on the bench at the top of the dugout, because I had to be far back enough to be able to get them both in the shot. And if you see the video, Casas literally sits there. The video, without any speeding up, was 10 plus minutes long. So he sat there for about 7 plus minutes thinking about how to answer. The question was, what is Garrett Whitlock's middle name? And he literally sat there for over 7 minutes thinking about it. And like, Rob's hand was getting tired holding the wasabi spoon. Like, my knees were getting tired in the crouch position. My arms were getting tired holding the phone. Sammy's standing off to the side, dying laughing. Like, it was a great time. He was a trooper about it.
He was deep in thought.
It was like a skit. It was like an I think you should leave skit. Like, he sat there and it was funny because he was kind of like, the way he was treating it was like he was doing a math equation. Like, yes, he was mumbling things to himself. He was like,
Steve,
like looking off. But it's like, there's nothing to figure out. You're just guessing a name. There's no equation. So I thought it was like, I thought he was doing like a bizarro comedy bit on us. It was really funny. But hey, he ate the wasabi. Had a little tear in his eye, but he did it.
He wanted to be tough about it, as all of us do, but it's almost impossible. And Rob gave him so much wasabi that there was just no way to tough it out. He got up and he hucked a giant loogie before walking into the dugout after, like,
oh yeah, we know that pain.
Yeah, that it is pain, and you feel the wasabi in your system for hours afterward. Rob was like, yeah, I didn't want to try it on a player that would be playing in the game later, because you never know, getting in some trouble with their system. But for a guy who's on the injured list, so that was a very interesting experience. We'll be curious to ask him later about any effects it had for the next few hours after that.
I might not want to know.
You know, he was very honest. You remember the spring training broadcast where he's like, yeah, I take my pregame poop. Like,
he's poop positive. That's okay. Nothing wrong with that. Everyone poops.
As we mentioned on ESPN tonight, he probably shared too much information.
Hell
he's
yeah.
Like that.
Hell yeah, brother.
He's awesome.
All right. My Nuff Said is really quick. People always complain about the ESPN baseball broadcast, and like, you know, sometimes it's deserved, sometimes it's not. You know, it's kind of subjective. Think what you want. But I had to point out, there was one bit where they were talking about Anthony Volpe, who's a young shortstop for the New York Yankees. You know, he's talented. The bat's okay. The defense is good. He can run a little bit. But, like, so far, nothing crazy. And the conversation was Carl Ravitch was talking about the best young shortstops in baseball. And the way he framed it, he said, there isn't a wrong choice. There isn't a wrong answer. And then he was discussing Bobby Witt Jr., Gunnar Henderson, and Anthony Volpe. That is so insane to put those three in the same sentence. That's like two heavyweights and then like a featherweight.
It's the dragon meme.
It's the dragon meme. The King Ghidorah meme. Yeah, that's the King Ghidorah meme where the two heads are scary and then there's one head that's not scary. Very, very whimsical looking head. But yeah, I thought that was funny. And I know like the Yankees are the most popular team. ESPN very, very, very obviously likes to focus on them and market them. And that's a good marketing move. And there's the King Ghidorah.
Yeah, that dragon on the right, that is Anthony.
Yeah, Hilton. Which one is which? Who's Witt and who's Henderson?
I think Gunner might actually. Ooh, Gunner this year is in the center, but I feel like Bob. I don't know. Gunner in the center, Bobby Witt shorter on the left.
I think Bobby's going to be the best of the three. But anyway,
I think Bobby right here because he's side eyeing. Like, why the hell is Anthony Volpe? Or no, that might be Gunner because they're in the same division.
Who knows?
He is side-eyeing. I've never noticed that before. He is
side-eyeing. I know. I'm noticing it now for the first time looking at it.
Anyway. Yeah. So I just thought that was a little bit crazy. So I don't understand. I don't know how to feel about it because like I was just saying, Yankees obviously really smart to market them, market Aaron Judge if he ever wants to show some personality. Juan Soto, Garrett Cole, like you can market those guys. I get it. But that's insane to put. It's just stupid. It's just very, 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 very silly. So, yeah.
Big Brave? I got a quick enough said. I do want to show love. You know, we always make some jokes about this person's trade and the return, but some sad news today about Mookie Betts. He had to leave the game. He got hit by a pitch, fractured his hand. He's not going to need surgery, but he's going to be out for a long time. And that's hard to see because I think we're all fans of Mookie Betts even when he got traded. And even to the standard baseball fan, having him in the game, having him active, just makes the game that much better. The versatility, the way he hits, personality, I think it is very fun to watch even to the common baseball fan. So it's going to suck. This is the first major injury at least that I can remember for Mookie having and not having him out there for a substantial amount of time. It is really going to be tough, but he'll be back. Dodgers will be in the playoffs and, hope Mookie gets healthy and this doesn't affect him long term.
Must be nice as a Dodgers fan to be like, yep, we lost maybe our best player right now, but we have a great roster with great depth. And beyond that depth, is a good farm system. How lucky are we? And our owner cares about the team. So,
can you imagine being in a spot where you lose Mookie and Yamamoto in the same weekend and there's still just zero doubt about you making the playoffs?
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, there's none. There's no doubt.
Now, if they lose Shohei like next week, then that's an issue.
Still no doubt. Still no doubt to me. They would still make the playoffs. Would have to happen? How many games are they up on a playoff spot?
I mean, how good are they without?
They're up enough.
I mean, with Mookie, you lose probably your best bat and your best defender.
They're 8 games up in their division right now.
Yeah, they'll be fine.
Wait, if you, I mean, they have a weak ass lineup. If you don't have Mookie and Ohtani, I mean, who do you got? Like Teoscar?
Dude, I don't know. It's the Dodgers. They just win.
Yeah, Freddie and Teoscar. That's not enough. You can't just have two.
But are you really gonna get 8 games? You're gonna get 8 games made up.
Don't sleep on the Padres, dude. No, actually, and then the Giants lost the son of the wind.
Grandson of the wind. The son of the wind is his father.
Tremendous, really?
Yeah.
All right, it's 12:20 in the morning. We should go to bed.
Let's wrap this baby up. It's been episode 82 of Play Tessie. We appreciate you guys tuning in. Before you leave, before you do something else, maybe watch the Celtics hopefully secure Banner 18, fingers crossed, because we definitely didn't jinx it last episode. But before you,
I put the anti-jinx on it at the end of the segment.
I don't know. By the way, this is just assuming.
Like it's not over yet. I hedged. Don't worry. I hedged.
All right. hit that subscribe button, whether you're on the Apple apps, Spotify, the Odyssey app. Rate this podcast 5 stars and hit that subscribe button. It helps us out a ton. And go check us out on YouTube. We are on the WEEI channel. We've got a Play Tessie playlist up there. You can hit the thumbs up button on those videos. Subscribe to WEEI. Helps us out a ton there too. And remember to check us out on the social accounts at Play Tessie on both Twitter and Instagram. For Sammy, for big brave Joe Braverman, it's Gordo here. The Sox are hot, people. Enjoy it. Enjoy these times. Till next time, this has been Play Tessie, episode 82. Toodaloo.
Hi, I'm Steph, and I work at United Healthcare. When I think about United Healthcare's members, I think of my own family. My niece was diagnosed with an ultra-rare genetic disorder. I know how hard it is for families. At United Healthcare, we can make it easier.
I'm Brian. I care because I know what it's like to not speak the language. It's not easy. Health insurance is complicated. I would say our job is to make everything easy for our UHC members. I work for United Healthcare. I'm committed to care.
This episode is supported by Ring, because at the end of the day, your home is your sanctuary. And with Ring, it's protected. Whether you're across the house or across the country, keeping an eye on things shouldn't be a mystery. With the battery doorbell, you can keep track of your packages and see more of what's happening at your front door in real time. If you want to make sure your yard is safe at night, the Outdoor Cam Plus delivers a wide field of view and enhanced video clarity with Retinal 2K video. And for the ultimate in detail, you can upgrade to 4K cameras and doorbells featuring Retinal Vision. It gives you ultra-clear footage that actually lets you zoom in without losing those important details. The Ring system is helpful every single day. Like a lot of us, most of our shopping is done online. There's a certain peace of mind that comes with knowing exactly when a package arrives while you're busy at work or running errands. It's not just about the technology. It's about the relief of knowing your home is secure. It's incredibly easy to set up, and it gives you that extra layer of protection for what matters most. Your door, your yard, your home, your peace of mind. With Ring, it's protected. Shop cameras, doorbells, and more right now at ring.com.
PNC Bank brings you Call of the Wild Money Moves.
You hear that?
YOLO!
That's an internet troll telling you to put all your money into a single investment.
YOLO! YOLO! YOLO!
He wants you to liquidate your emergency fund.
YOLO!
And buy a digital racehorse named Silicon Steve.
YOLO!
Stay vigilant. He's very persistent.
YOLO!
Guard against wild money moves with PNC Bank. Brilliantly boring since 1865.
Jake from State Farm. I just beat my running PR, so I'm celebrating with a Banana Bonanza smoothie.
Hey, and you can keep celebrating when you create an affordable price just for you by bundling your home and auto with the State Farm Personal Price Plan. Go bananas.
I will. Hey, make it a large.
Bundling. Just another way to save with the Personal Price Plan. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Prices are based on rating plans that vary by state. Coverage options are selected by the customer. Availability, amount of discounts and savings, and eligibility vary by state.
Washing your dishes before you wash your dishes? Dirty Labs believes going green in the kitchen should not mean doing extra work. Their bioenzyme dishwasher detergent cuts through stuck on food and leaves dishes sparkling without compromising on safety or performance. No pre-rinse, no post-rinse, no compromise. Just powerful cleaning made without harsh chemicals. If Dirty Labs can't make you believe in the power of green cleaning, nothing will. Fall in love, or it's free at dirtylabs.com.